I've got regrets I've tried to kill. I always have and I always will. Now as far as I can tell, I know the devil way too well. But I knew the price when I made the deal. Always have.
Call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane and famous Exxon gasoline. The wake-up call is also brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. Now your host, Rick Moore.
All right, everybody. Good morning. Good morning. May 2nd, 2010. Thank you so much for being here with us today. I hope I can grab everyone's attention for just a moment. It's not anything fun to do, but something that I need to do. I want to give a little credit out to an uncle. Actually, I guess technically he's a great uncle. But Uncle Roger Messier, 77, of Pocosin, who passed away on Friday with his family by his side. He's a great man, served his country in the Korean War through the Air Force. And then went on to the NASA Houston Space Program as a systems engineer. He was part of most of the space flights in the 60s and 70s, and I had him as a guest on this program several years ago to tell some anecdotes about all that. Truly an incredible time, and to listen to him talk about all those different flights and programs that he was a part of. He was a member of Pocosin City Council and the school board, loved to serve his community. Uncle Roger was married for 55 years, his 4 children and 8 grandchildren, and a Pocosin family that when I go home for Thanksgiving or Christmas could fill a bus, usually over 40 people at Thanksgiving or Christmas. He's a great man, he's always concerned about others, and would want to be a part of affordable housing. So today's program is in his honor. Roger Messier passed away on Friday. All right, thank you for letting me do that. A little bit after 11 here on Sunday. And let me thank some other folks who allow us to be here. Support today coming from Ivy Inn Restaurant, featuring locally inspired seasonal American cuisine in an historic 18th century house with a garden patio. You can find them on Old Ivy Road in Charlottesville. Ivy Inn serves dinner Monday through Saturday from 5 until 9. Reservations are recommended. More at ivyinnrestaurant.com. All right, let's get on to our topic today. We are fortunate to have Charlottesville Mayor Dave Norris here with us. Mayor?
Good to be with you.
Thank you so
much.
My
condolences on the loss of your uncle.
Well,
sounds like a great guy.
He was a great man. Yeah. And always had a smile and a lot of jokes. And apparently, until the end, he passed away from lung cancer and was giving the nurses and the aides a hard time until he was he passed away in his sleep. But thank you for that.
Yeah.
Affordable housing is our conversation today, and please write down the phone number if you'd like to call and participate a little later in the program, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. That's the toll-free line, because while, Mayor, you're here from Charlottesville, this is a topic that's a national topic.
Sure.
So whomever, wherever you're listening, there's certainly questions to go along that hopefully you can provide answers for. And I always sort of start from the basics because I regularly don't know squat about the topic until I start building up my knowledge base for the hour. Mm-hmm. And I don't like to assume that people who are listening know everything about it. I want to know what the definition of affordable housing is.
Well, there's a sort of a technical definition, which is it's housing that tends to cost more than 30% of your income. And so if you're paying more than 30% of your income towards your housing cost, it's considered unaffordable. And when we talk about affordable housing programs, they tend to specifically target families who are living and individuals who are living under the area median income and typically under 80% of the area median income. And what that translates in Charlottesville, Virginia, or this area, the area median income for a family of four is, I believe it's in the mid-60s now, mid-$60,000 range. And so 80% of that tends to be in the high $40,000 range. So affordable housing, you know, there's any number of factors that makes housing affordable or unaffordable. It's a terribly complex sort of issue. And all we can do on the local level is nibble around the edges of it. But I feel like we have been doing more nibbling now than we did in the past, and I'm happy about that. And I think there's probably some more nibbling left to do.
Well, let me back you up a little bit, mm-hmm. because as someone who started in the, I'll go into business and finance and learned early on that a lot of numbers and percentages tend to make me glaze. Let's go back to defining affordable housing. You mentioned $60,000 or so for the family. That's a family of four, much
that's
like
the area,
poverty definition.
That's the area median income for a family of four. It's about mid-60s, I believe, right now.
All right, so the Charlottesville family in the median, so halfway point is $60,000.
Right. Cool.
All right. Does affordable housing apply to a single or just a married couple?
Sure. Anybody who's paying more than 30% of their income, whether they're an individual or a family, who's paying more than 30% of their income on their housing costs is considered to be living in unaffordable housing. Right now, we have over 50% of the residents of the city of Charlottesville who are paying more than 50% of their income, more than 30% of their income on housing costs, which means there's a substantial number of people who are having to cut back on other things like transportation, food, healthcare, daycare, clothing, you name it, in order to afford housing. And that's a big challenge.
Is that have to, and we're speaking specifically about Charlottesville at the moment, although the topic with Charlottesville Mayor Dave Norris, affordable housing, goes beyond the city of Charlottesville.
Absolutely.
But these are numbers that you can provide us being the mayor of the city. And you said over 50% of
correct.
The folks, based on those numbers, are living in, quote, unaffordable housing?
That's correct.
Is that due to the cost of rent and home purchase, or is that due to the pay scale in this area?
Yes.
Okay, fair enough.
This is, as I said earlier, there's many factors that that contribute to this issue, this problem, one of which is the fact we are a victim of our own success in a way, in that we've become quite an attractive place to live. And the biggest driver of housing costs here in Charlottesville and in every other part of the country is supply and demand. And when you're living in a community where you have a lot of people wanting to move to or you know, continue their careers in, you've got a lot of demand. And when you don't have enough supply, that tends to drive up costs of the product, whatever product that is. In this case, it's housing. So that's definitely one factor. And so we have higher than average housing costs because we are an attractive place to live. So that's a good thing in a way that, you know, and the other issue here is that in many cities, one of the reasons why housing in certain, particularly in certain neighborhoods is quote unquote affordable is because you have generally decrepit neighborhoods where you have an, because neighborhoods are run down, it artificially deflates housing costs because there's no demand for the housing there. In Charlottesville, we hardly have any quote unquote, or I don't know that we have any quote unquote run down neighborhoods. I mean, there's no place in Charlottesville that I wouldn't live. You know, if I've spent time in every neighborhood in Charlottesville, there are neighborhoods that tend to have maybe higher crime than others, but there's no neighborhood in Charlottesville that resembles any neighborhood in some of the big cities you hear about where you don't want to ever be at night and you don't want to raise your family there. So we're a victim of our own success. The other half of the equation, as you mentioned, is the wages. In Charlottesville, depending on how you look at the numbers, we are either first or second in the state. And over the years, we tend to go back and forth between first and second in terms of the size of the gap that we have here between housing costs and wages.
I have a phrase here that is yours called City of Contrast.
Right.
Which really caught my attention.
Yeah. So we have, we have a lot of people who work in this area who are making, you know, working in the retail and service sectors who are making relatively low wages. And it's that population that tends to struggle the most for lack of affordable housing. And so in the absence of a sufficient supply of affordable housing or higher wages, they're having to make some very tough choices. And so they're either working multiple jobs to be able to afford the cost of housing, which means more time away from their families, or they're doubling up with friends or family members, so they have overcrowded housing, or they're settling for substandard housing. Some of them, unfortunately, end up going homeless for periods of time. And in many cases, they're simply just paying more than they really should on their housing costs. They're paying over 30% of their income on their housing costs, which again means they're having to cut back on other basic essentials. And in some cases, and in a lot of cases, they're actually commuting from many miles away because that's where they can find affordable housing. So they're living in Waynesboro or Buckingham County or Greene County and commuting into work, which puts a lot of strain on our roadways and puts a lot of strain on their family budgets when gas prices go up. And so it's really to our benefit as a community to make sure we have a sufficient supply of affordable housing, and it's to our benefit as a community to do what we can to increase wages. Now, there's several ways to go about that. One is, how do we try to support our local economy to where we're an even more attractive place for businesses to locate, to grow, to create a career ladder, living wage kind of jobs? And how do we as local governments model what we want to see happen in the private sector by paying our employees living wages, or at least decent wages? How do we attract the kinds of jobs? You know, it used to be for people who weren't on a college track or a technical track, they could get a decent job in the manufacturing sector, in the industrial sector, make enough money to buy a house, raise a family, you know, retire on a pension, sort of live the American dream. And that in many ways was the best avenue out of poverty and into the middle class for many millions of Americans. And that's a sector of the economy where we've been hemorrhaging jobs both locally and nationally to our detriment. And that's been a tremendous failure on the part of all of us in federal government, state government, local government, and in the private sector is standing by idly and watching all these manufacturing jobs get shipped overseas, and our people are suffering as a result.
Charlottesville Mayor Dave Norris here on the Wake Up Call as we talk about affordable housing. What is it? How to find it? Who should provide it? Call up with your question or comment if you'd like. 979-0919. 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS is the toll-free number, as I've said several times now. This is not a topic just devoted to the city of Charlottesville, although Charlottesville Mayor Norris has agreed to come on and talk about this. Mayor, we gave some numbers for the city. I would assume that the numbers change between Charlottesville and Albemarle County and from Charlottesville to Richmond and so forth. But does the way that the, and I see the phones ringing now, does the way that the government provides that assistance change from the city to the county, from city to city in the state?
Well, each locality chooses how it wants to address this issue. This issue does affect localities across the Commonwealth, and some more than others. But we have affordable housing challenges in Albemarle County. We have them in other localities in this area. And the city of Charlottesville has taken a somewhat more proactive role, particularly in the last few years, in trying to make sure that the folks who do the hard work of making our city function can actually afford to live in our city. But we're seeing, you know, each of the localities take their own, implement their own measures to promote affordable housing, whether that's providing incentives for the development community to include affordable housing and new developments, or whether it's actually providing funding for organizations like Habitat for Humanity or Piedmont Housing Alliance or Albemarle Housing Improvement, other groups, whether it's working, in our case, in the city of Charlottesville, the biggest thing we've got going now in terms of promoting both the quantity and quality of affordable housing is the partnership we have with our Redevelopment and Housing Authority, which owns 376 units of public housing in the city and is about to engage in a pretty massive and extended and expensive redevelopment process where over the course of the next 5-10 years, we're going to see all seven of the public housing neighborhoods in Charlottesville, hopefully, be revitalized and improve the quality of the housing for the residents that live there, and change the dynamics of those neighborhoods where it's not all low-income housing, but it's a mixed-income housing with better amenities for the families there, better jobs, better quality housing. There's all kinds of things that local governments are trying to do, and we can all learn from each other.
All right, let's take our first call. Caller, are you with me?
Yes, my name is Yuri Miletich.
All right, Jerry, with your question or comment for the mayor.
Well, earlier, Mayor Norris was saying that there was two factors that were driving high housing costs to Charlottesville. On the one hand, you have high demand, a lot of people want to live here and all that. On the other hand, you have pressure on wages, and you have a lot of low-wage sectors where people are not going to be able to afford decent housing. But the thing is, Mayor Norris did not address the fact that supply is also a huge factor in what makes housing costs what they are. And I'd like to know what he's doing to allow people to come in and build. Because the thing is, obviously you have the fact that no one wants anything in their backyard. No one wants high-density housing in their neighborhood. But that is what helps make housing affordable. And then my second remark would just be towards, he was mentioning public housing. And while it's a noble goal for the government to pursue that, you know, all studies will bear out that it's more expensive for government to produce such things and to run such things. So I'd just like to hear what the mayor would say about that, and I'd really appreciate that you guys let me get on air. Thank you.
Thanks.
Are you still on the line, Yuri? Oh, sorry.
Sorry, I think you were about a second too late for me hanging up.
I may have missed the last part of his last question, but anyhow, I'll try and take a stab at it. He's absolutely right. Supply is a major factor. It is supply and demand driven, and it's supply of housing generally, but it's also supply of housing that has built-in subsidies to make it more affordable. And we in the city are opening up new opportunities for higher density housing in the city. We worked with the home builders a couple years ago and went down to the General Assembly and asked to have a bill passed, which eventually did pass. It was a little bit more watered down than we hoped, but we got a bill passed which allows the city to create higher density zones for housing development, and a developer in exchange for agreeing to include a certain number of units or a certain percentage of units of affordable housing in their developments, is allowed to build more units than they would otherwise.
All right. So if I heard that right, it's if, and I'm just going to make up some numbers, if you're going in as a builder to put in a 100-unit mm-hmm. area, if I come to Charlottesville Planning Commission and say I'd like to build a 100-unit, that the bill or the what became a law, you wanted them to have, did you say 30%?
No. I think it's a scaled percentage, but a percentage or a proportion of that new housing would be affordable, built as affordable housing, and in exchange, the developer would be allowed to build more units than they would otherwise under current zoning. So it's a win-win situation. The developer gets to build higher density housing, and we get some affordable housing units out of it. We also worked with the development community to streamline the approval process for projects that include affordable housing.
And Charlottesville gets a pretty, pretty hard slap on that not happening very often.
Well,
I mean, Charlottesville and Albemarle both.
I would say more Albemarle than Charlottesville, but
both get accused of right. having a lot of hoops to jump
right,
through.
Right. And so we're trying to make that process easier for people who are trying to do the right thing and contribute to the affordable housing solution. Now, I should mention, though, this isn't for the city as a whole. We're really trying to concentrate higher density development in our mixed-use commercial corridors, so places like the Downtown Mall, West Main Street, Cherry Avenue, East High Street. You know, places, we're not talking about necessarily going into a long-established single-family residential neighborhood and putting up high-rise affordable housing. That's not the model we're talking about. But we're trying to create a more urban feel in certain segments of our community that's pedestrian-oriented, that's transit-oriented, that includes a mix of housing types and for a mix of incomes. Getting to the second question, I think what he was saying was that we can't trust government to run housing. It doesn't typically work. Is that your impression?
Yeah.
The reality is that for the most part, housing in Charlottesville, affordable housing, is not provided by the government. There are, as I mentioned earlier, 376 units that have been in place for decades now of public housing that is government run. And it's based on an old model of building and managing housing, which I think has been arguably a failure, in that we've concentrated high numbers of very low-income families in these isolated pockets of poverty, and then subsequently neglected those neighborhoods. So we've allowed the housing stock to crumble. We haven't addressed issues of crime and quality of life and neighborhood safety and basic community amenities like decent playgrounds for children. And we've allowed these neighborhoods to go down rather than doing what the private sector would have done, which is to reinvest in these neighborhoods. And so the model that we're pursuing now by revitalizing and redeveloping public housing is actually trying to move beyond that old model of public housing, and instead work to integrate housing both within the neighborhood and tie that housing into the broader community. Right now, many of our public housing neighborhoods are literally not necessarily literally walled off, but they're figuratively walled off, in some cases fenced off, from the neighborhoods around them. We want to tie them into the neighborhoods around them to ease, to better connect them with the neighborhood and with the broader economy. And what you can't do, though, is you don't want to do what we did back in the days of Vinegar Hill and urban renewal and just go in and tear down a neighborhood and displace all the residents there. Before we started the planning process for redevelopment of public housing, we worked with the residents of public housing, and I'm very proud of this, and we're actually getting a good bit of national attention now for this. We created a residents' bill of rights, which guaranteed that residents would have meaningful and full participation in this whole redevelopment process. There would not be any residents made homeless because of this process, that we would allow all residents who still qualify to move back into public housing, into these neighborhoods, once the process is done. We would target residents for the jobs and business opportunities that are going to be created in all the construction work that'll be done. So I think it's a pretty neat process, and but we're only about 3/4 of the way now through the planning process itself, and we haven't even broken ground on any of these new projects.
11:24 here on the Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. Topic today, affordable housing. Our guest, Charlottesville Mayor Dave Norris, as we have this 979-0919. 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. Let me give you the markets of Tiger Fuel forecast for Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley. Partly cloudy with a 20% chance of showers and thunderstorms in Charlottesville and the Valley. Highs in the 90 to 95 today. A little cooler in the Valley. Mostly cloudy with a 50% chance of showers and storms tonight. Lows 65 to 70. And then mostly cloudy tomorrow. 70% chance of showers. Highs 80 to 85, much cooler, only upper 70s in the Valley. Right now, it's a nice day out there, mostly cloudy, 79 in the Valley, 77 in Lynchburg, 81 in Richmond, fair, and 78 in Charlottesville.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, a refreshing pause on your journey to anywhere with locations all over town. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And support today also coming from Petite Bebe, a child's and maternity boutique offering everything for babies, children up to 14, and mothers-to-be. Petite Bebe carries sustainable products for kids, including strollers and car seats, clothing, as well as gift items. And they also offer a baby shower registry. Petite Bebe can be found at 1st and Water Street in Charlottesville, open Monday through Friday 10 to 6 and Saturdays 10 to 5. Online, it's petitebebe.com. Lewage Graphics also allows us to be on air today. You can find them at Mead Avenue and East High Street in Charlottesville, providing custom T-shirts and sportswear, plus promotional items for schools, organizations, and businesses. That's Blue Ridge Graphics, 296-9746, brgtshirts.com. And let me take a moment and remind those of you who made your pledge to the just-completed fund drive but haven't paid them yet, please do so as soon as possible. People who can take your payment and help you with your premiums are here until 7 p.m. on weekdays, often later, and on weekends too, especially if you call first. You want to mail it in, it's 2250 Old Ivy Road in Charlottesville behind the Ivy Inn restaurant, zip code 22903. Second round of written reminders to those with unpaid pledges is going out next week. And thanks to those of you who have already honored your pledge, helping us reach 93% collection on the over $86,000 pledged. All right, back with Charlottesville Mayor Dave Norris. And we have a phone call from Matt in Albemarle. Matt, did you wait around for me to finish all that?
I actually did. Nice to talk to you this morning, Rick. Good morning, right. Dave, Mr. Mayor.
Good morning, Matt.
All right, what's your question or comment?
Well, this may be a little bit of an aside. I wondered if we could talk for a second about, Dave mentioned earlier, the idea of living wage initiatives in the city. I have an extremely small micro business, which operate in the city, and we're talking about expanding it to small business status.
Carpe
I'm
donuts.
Curious because part of our business model is to prioritize a living wage for anybody who works with us, and I just wondered if a business is going to prioritize a living wage for the folks who work for it in the city, are there any initiatives or any programs that the city is considering that would make that more affordable?
And Matt, before we go any further, I'll let the mayor answer, but you should go back on SeavillePodcast.com, and this program talked with folks from the university about their program to get a living wage going through university employees. All right, Mayor.
I followed a little bit, but maybe not completely up to speed yet, but I would love to hear what's maybe in store for the future.
Yeah, first of all, I have to mention that the idea of a living wage is sort of a moving target. There's a number of groups that have different formulas for determining a quote unquote living wage. It's not the simplest definition of a living wage is somebody who's working 40 hours a week at that wage would not be living below the poverty line. But, we in the city, there's some things that we can control and there's some things that we can't control. In the city, the thing that we can control is we can pay our own employees a decent wage. And so right now, any full-time employee in the city of Charlottesville makes $11.44 an hour, and plus benefits. We also took a stand a number of years back, well before I got on city council, to say that for most contractors doing business with the city, we're going to require them to match our base wage so that their own full-time employees are making today $11.44 an hour at a minimum. Now, that was arguably questionable about whether or not we had the authority to do that. The Virginia General Assembly has sort of stayed neutral on this issue about whether localities can require contractors to pay a living wage. In the absence of clear guidance, either for or against such authority, the city of Charlottesville took, I think, a pretty noble stand and said, we're going to go ahead and do it. And that was, it's been probably 10 years now, and we haven't been challenged on it yet. So UVA does offer their full-time employees a decent wage. It's not as high as ours. We'd like to see it higher. But the issue with UVA is that they've been unwilling to take the similar risk in terms of their contract employees. They have quite a number of employees that work for contractors who do business at UVA who are not paid the same level of wages that UVA pays its own employees or that we pay our employees. And that's really where we hope to see UVA step up. I think Matt's question was really more about how do we help local businesses to better absorb the costs of paying a living wage. Is that
exactly right?
Yeah, and that's a good question. I mean, you know, Matt, if you have some specific thoughts, I mean, I'm a little bit at a loss because that's one of those things which we can't control. Obviously, what local businesses pay their employees. The state of Virginia does not allow localities to set a minimum wage above the state minimum wage. I would be open to any ideas that Matt or any other local business people have for, you know, ways that we can encourage businesses like Carpe Donut and others to do the right thing and either pay a living wage and or prioritize, you know, contracts where living wages are paid.
And Mayor, you don't hide your email address.
cvaledave@hotmail.com.
That's how anytime. I tracked you down and
right.
Threatened you to put you on the air for the hour.
That's right.
Matt, I know that that wasn't a full answer to your question. It is a little off topic, and I hope you appreciate that.
You know, one thing that we can do is to, you know, because wages are a tricky thing because you want to make sure that you're getting value for your dollar as an employer. And right now when we have so many local residents who don't have high school degrees, who don't come into the workplace with sufficient employment skills, the employers argue, well, why should be required or expected to pay a living wage when we're not seeing the kind of skill set that might demand a higher
wage. It's a two-way system, right?
Right.
If you're not going to do your side to learn enough and provide yourself with enough skills,
mm-hmm.
why should I have to do more?
Right. And so one of the things that we're trying to do in the city is to, first of all, reduce. I mean, this is talking about prevention. I mean, first of all, we have 5,000 adults and roughly in the city of Charlottesville alone. We only have 40,000 people in our whole city. We have 5,000 adults who do not have a high school diploma. That's a huge number. I mean, that's and without a high school diploma, it's so hard to get ahead and get onto that career track that we talked about earlier. First and foremost, let's reduce the dropout rate. Let's do everything we can to keep kids in school and keep kids engaged in their education. That's not an easy nut to crack, but I give a lot of credit to our superintendent and school board for putting in new programs, new measures to try to reduce the dropout rate, to reduce the achievement gap. And then also is how do we help our workers to develop the job skills that will help them succeed in today's economy and allow them to make the kind of wages that they need so that they don't need subsidized housing. So we've increased our workforce development programs. We have one of the things that I'm most excited about is what we, you know, one of the things we hear a lot from employers is that they'll have people coming in, particularly young people coming in applying for jobs who don't really know how to dress appropriately, who don't know how to communicate appropriately, who don't know how to show up on time, just sort of these soft skills that are going to make an employee successful on the job. So the question becomes, well, how do you inculcate the those kinds of skills in young people? And what we've done is we have this little summer jobs program for teenagers in the city. When I got on city council, there was like 15 kids in this program. It's a tiny little program. And what it does is gives young people on-the-job experience, gives them a little money in their pockets, gives them some on-the-job mentoring so they know how to dress appropriately, behave appropriately, communicate appropriately, and we teach them how to budget their money. That's another big issue is financial management. But so my one of my goals since I've been on council has been to try and double the size of that program each year. And so my first year we brought it up to 30. The next year went up to 60. Then it was up to 120. Last year we had a supplemental program through the Stimulus Act, added another 100 kids, I think, something like that. So it's growing. I'd like to get it to the point where eventually any young person, any teenager in the city of Charlottesville that can benefit from a summer job can participate. It's not an expensive proposition, but I feel like in the long run, that's going to do almost as much as anything to help our employees succeed, or help our workforce to get the skills they need to make the wages that we're wanting employers to pay.
All right, Matt, I know that we've wandered all through that. Seville, Dave.
I appreciate you taking the time to look at the connection between, you know, what the money people make and where they can afford to live. So thank you for taking the time to go off track a little.
Yeah, and Matt, please do let me know if you have any specific ideas about, you know, what we can do to help businesses that are trying to do the right thing.
Absolutely, and it's just a funny position to be in to have to think about, do I position myself in Charlottesville? Do I wander over to Louisa? You know, there's lots of areas around here, and I think it would be very powerful to try for the city to incentivize a living wage through all the tools at its disposal to bring businesses in, sure. Not just because they're large employers, but because they're good employers.
Absolutely.
All right, and Matt, I'm going to... You're not going to be able to reply to this on air. Write down my email address, abstractme@aol.com. I already have a program lined up. Mark Maynard from Wintergreen will be on here. We are going to be talking about finding a job and hiring for your job. And it might be nice to have someone from a much smaller business participate in that program as well. Abstractme@aol.com. Listeners are always welcome to send me an email for thoughts on future shows. All right, 11:37 here on the wake-up call. We are talking about affordable housing and obviously some of the tangents and factors that go along with affordable housing. Charlottesville Mayor Dave Norris, 979-0919, 1-877 WNRN Rocks is the toll-free number. Mayor, several questions of mine popped up during that conversation with Matt and yourself. The not in my backyard folks came up. My understanding is that there is something, I don't know where it stands in terms of discussion or happening or locked into place, is that there's a Woolen Mills project that is designed to provide affordable housing for the elderly, although I think it's 55 and over, which as I approach doesn't seem to be so elderly anymore.
Right.
And there are several in that area who say, wait a minute, I don't know that we want that over here.
Actually, on that specific project, I want to give the neighborhood a lot of credit for not actually falling prey to the NIMBYitis. That's a case, actually, where the developer did the right thing, and the developer in this case being the Jefferson Area Board for Aging, did the right thing by sitting down with the neighborhood association, with the neighborhood leadership early on in this process and said, what do you need from this process so that it doesn't trigger a not in my backyard kind of reaction? And yeah, you're not going to please 100% of the people, but they were able to bring a significant swath of the neighborhood around to where the neighborhood recognized that if there's going to be development on that particular parcel, this is the one they'd like to see because it has certain guarantees in there about open space protection. It has certain guarantees in there about design control. It's not a large development. It's 28 units. It's not some big high rise. It's seniors. It's targeted at seniors. And we expect, in fact, that some of the seniors that are currently living in Woolen Mills may end up living in this new development. One of the issues that came up had to do with what role the neighborhood would have and the city would have in terms of design control. I think we've worked that out now to everybody's satisfaction. And again, I want to give a lot of credit to both JABA, the Jefferson Area Board for Aging, Chris Murray specifically, and to the neighborhood, Victoria Dunham and others in the neighborhood, for working together. This is really the model that we should all, and I wish, in fact, on this case, that the city had stepped up on our side a little bit more to create the kind of, I hate to use the cliche, but win-win-win partnership that makes an affordable housing or any development, any project succeed, where you have neighborhoods working with the development community, working with the city to ease the process and not end up with everybody at each other's throats. That hasn't always been the case in the past, but I think there's good ways to go about doing affordable housing development or housing development generally. And that's one that we should look closely at.
All right, 11:41 on the wake up call. Charlottesville Mayor Dave Norris here as we talk about affordable housing, what it is, how you make it. I have a caller, online caller. Please hang on for just a second. 11:41.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, brought to you by the Markets of Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly on newsstands every Thursday. Now here's Rick with what you can find in this week's Hook.
Oh, what started nearly 80 years ago as a small party of friends has turned into a bipartisan political tradition, the Shad Planking, where candidates are launched, citizens can mingle with leaders, and fish can be eaten. The Hook takes a look. After a recent incident, Albemarle County Police redraw their policy on using the taser. And UVA's amphitheater, originally built nearly 90 years ago, is getting an historic touch-up. Read about the past to help understand the future. The Hook, reminding you that Mother's Day is just next Sunday. And let's thank Blue Ridge Mountain Sports, where you can go hiking and backpacking. Whether you're experienced or just starting out, the staff at Blue Ridge can send you to all the right places. You can also pick up the pamphlet, 15 Favorite Hikes in Virginia. Details are at brms.com. You'll find Blue Ridge Mountain Sports in the Barracks Road Shopping Center in Charlottesville and two locations in Richmond. And don't go anywhere, because at noon, it's Drew Thompson with Les Temps Perdue. If French isn't your thing, at WNRN, that's The Times Gone By, 80s and 90s alternative music. Tune in for it next. That's Les Temps Perdue, brought to you in part by the Visual Light and Vinegar Hill Cinemas, only on WNRN. All right, Mayor, let's take our call from Paul in Columbia, Virginia. Hi, Paul.
Hey, how are you doing?
Good morning. Question, comment?
Yeah, well, it's kind of a complex question, but I want to get you all started on this. It has to do with, the previous caller was, essentially what I heard was he's looking for some kind of a tax incentive or some type of incentive to pay his people this living wage, and you know the whistles and the bells go off in my head, or you know that's essentially, is he asking the taxpayers to help pay his employee? And the second thing I wanted to bring up was there was a comment made about the low income housing and an area being, quote, walled off from the areas around it, and how that, it's a bad idea to essentially force an area like that to change. But I'm just curious as to, is that really, you're perpetuating a bad situation by not allowing the free market to push it towards change, or, you know, I'll let y'all comment on that.
All right, thanks, man.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'll start with the second part. He's right. We need to move more towards a market-oriented approach to public housing. And the reason I say that is because government subsidies, public housing is very heavily subsidized by the federal government. Those subsidies are declining, and we don't see that changing anytime in the future. So what the smart housing authorities are doing around the country are trying to figure out how to be more entrepreneurial, how to work with the private sector. And that's one thing I didn't really touch on too much in talking about this redevelopment process for public housing. It's going to involve partnerships with the nonprofit sector, with the private sector, move away from a model where it's entirely government operated housing, but it's a more of a mix, where these communities aren't little government run enclaves, but they're tied into the broader market economy. And in terms of the first question, I think, we provide incentives both on the federal and the state and even on the local level for business creation, for business growth, business development in certain areas of the city or certain areas of the state or country. There's all kinds of criteria that goes into that. Virginia, unfortunately, has this ages-old legal structure, which is called the Dillon Rule State, where we, on the local level, can only do things that are specifically allowed by the General Assembly, by the state government. And so our hands are a little bit tied when it comes to the kind of incentives that we can offer to businesses locally. For instance, I'll give you a good example, is that I, for a moment, explored the possibility of trying to offer some incentives in our own city contracting when we do business with the private sector, whatever that is, to see if we could include an incentive a bonus provision, whatnot, for locally owned businesses. To be able to say that if you're a locally owned business and you're going to be hiring locally or you already hire locally, that you'll get some extra points in the scoring for when you apply for this city contract, whatever the contract is. And I was quickly told that we don't have the authority to do that. So even though it's in our own interest to see dollars recycle in our community, see jobs created in our community, see local businesses succeed, legally we are not allowed to do that by the state of Virginia. That's one small example of how the Dillon Rule, I think, stifles the ability of local governments to do things to benefit our communities. And so it's one of the reasons why I suspect, if Matt and others come forward with ideas on how what kind of incentives we can put in place for encouraging or rewarding businesses that offer a living wage or contract with living wage employers, that I may well come back and find that we're just simply not allowed to offer those incentives. But I'm certainly of open mind. And the other things that we can do is go to the General Assembly and get enabling legislation passed, which we have done before in other areas. So.
11:47 on the wake up call. Dial us up with your question or comment, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN Rocks. Talking about affordable housing with Charlottesville's Mayor Dave Norris. Mayor Paul, recent last caller, it seemed, and he said that when the previous caller, and there were talks about benefits or some sort of underwriting towards a smaller business that wanted to pay at a certain wage. He said it immediately got him, with thoughts in his head, which made me think Democrat versus Republican. And it's difficult for me to say that because I don't know Paul, and he didn't make any mention about who he votes for. But it seems that for many people, affordable housing would be attributed as something for the Democrats, whether you're for it or against it, because it's a social issue, money spent by the government. But Republican Governor McDonnell has recently brought forth his new plans to expand affordable housing, correct? Can you tell
That's
us
correct.
What's going on there?
Yeah, I would say it's absolutely not a Democratic or Republican issue. some of the biggest champions of affordable housing locally are Republicans. I can name any number of them. I mean, so it's a community issue. And there may be, you know, I think the smart communities are the ones that are trying to move beyond that left-right Republican-Democratic paradigm and figure out what are practical solutions that work for creation of affordable housing, and whether that's market-driven, public-driven, nonprofit-driven, or ideally some combination of the above, because we all have a vested interest in making sure that the people who work here and do the hard work of making this community function can afford to live here. Now, you're right. Governor McDonnell last week announced that for the first time in the Commonwealth of Virginia was going to develop a statewide housing policy. And he's pulling together a group of people to get to work on that. One of his top advisors is a gentleman who has had, Mr. Sled, who's had extensive experience in the issue of affordable housing and specifically in the issue of homelessness, and worked with different housing groups in the past. I give the governor a lot of credit for taking this step. Now, the real, you know, the proof's in the pudding. What we want to make sure is it's not, doesn't end up just being a lot of lip service, but actually ends up with an actionable agenda for, you know, promoting and preserving affordable housing that we then see real energy behind. And again, it's not just some document that's left to gather dust on a shelf, which is so often the case with these studies and task forces. And I mean, we see that at all levels of government. So.
1151, dial us up, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN Rocks is toll free. Charlottesville Mayor Dave Norris talking about affordable housing. Mayor, I saw this phrase several places, including with you, cost of the land.
Mm-hmm.
It's very expensive part of home ownership, or whether you're buying it or building on it. And you had some interesting thoughts on how to reduce that as a burden or a wall to block affordable housing.
Cost of land costs, at least in the city and in the county, are a major driver of housing costs overall. That make one of the things that makes housing unaffordable. And construction costs as well, although those are certainly coming down recently. But land costs are a major issue, and it's actually not my. I think what you're referring to is it's not actually my idea. It's a local group called the Thomas Jefferson Community Land Trust. I think, is that what you're referring to? But anyhow,
yes.
So they're looking at models that have been put into place in other parts of the country, where you have a nonprofit organization called a land trust that actually buys and maintains ownership of the land on which a new development is built, and what that does is it allows. So then the person who buys the house simply buys the building and doesn't end up having to pay for the land, which again can be pretty expensive. And then it keeps the that way when the house then resells 5 or 10 years or 20 years down the line, a lot of times one of the main drivers for cost escalation in housing over time is it's not necessarily that the building increases in value, it's the land increasing in value, and that removes that from the equation. So the idea is that it keeps that home affordable in the long run. And many other communities have land trusts. This would be the very first one in the Commonwealth of Virginia, and they're in the process now they've got their board of directors. They've worked through some of the legal issues. I think they're trying to find their first project to work on. There's all kinds of issues regarding, you know, there's all kinds of legal issues and real estate issues, logistical issues to work through. But there's a great team behind it, and I think they're going to make it work. This is not something that the city of Charlottesville is involved with in any formal way, although I'm happy to see it happening.
You know, we've talked about this in several areas today. We've talked about affordable housing, how to make it happen, some of the problems that lead to it being necessary, and the pros, or not the pros and cons, but the laws that make it easy or difficult. But what, I think I skipped over it so early in the conversation, is what are the pros of doing this? I mean, other than being good community people,
right,
and allowing people who don't have, you know, the finances to make this happen, you know, hey, I got my own financial problems.
Sure, sure.
You know, what are the pros of doing this?
Well, for any community that's interested in what some have called smart growth, which means making sure that people aren't having to live 30 miles away and commute into town, this affordable housing has to be part of the equation. You've got to have a mix of housing income, housing types, to enable your teachers, your police officers, your nurses, your retail workers to be able to live in the community where they work. So it benefits a community in that way. It benefits local families. It benefits employers. Several years ago, the Chamber of Commerce did a survey of local employers to find out what is the top public policy issue that they wanted to see addressed. And that year, this was back particularly when housing prices were just rising by double digits every year. Now, that's obviously not the case anymore, but they cited affordable housing as the number one issue. This is 2005, I believe. And because it was posing a challenge to employers to attract and retain high-quality employees, the fact that it was hard to find housing locally at the wages that are available. So it benefits the community in many ways. And one thing, I don't want to leave the impression that this is a, you know, even though I do represent, today I'm representing local government, most of the work that's being done to actually build affordable housing right now in the last couple of decades is being done in the nonprofit sector. So you've got groups like Habitat for Humanity, Piedmont Housing Alliance, Albemarle Housing Improvement, Region 10 has their housing services group. I can just go down the line. I mean, there's a lot of groups out there. They are getting some government support in this, but a lot of their support's coming from local individuals, local businesses, local foundations. And so we're learning how to leverage government dollars in a way we're getting better results, and it doesn't end up being government-run housing. It's housing that's supported by the community. And that's, I think, been a very successful model. If you look at, particularly, like, take a group like Habitat for Humanity, they've been doing a lot of good work in the city and in the counties, and helping first-time home buyers to be able to afford that new home. But they've got a really exciting initiative now where they're in the process of transforming a couple of mobile home communities, what we sometimes called trailer parks, and one being Sunrise in Charlottesville, another one being Southwood in Albemarle County. This has the potential to be a national model, what the work that Habitat's doing, going in, buying these trailer parks, and then trying to raise enough money to build new housing in place of these mobile homes, trailers, many of which are in fairly sad condition, and guaranteeing that the longtime residents of those trailer parks can stay by providing housing that they can afford. It's much higher quality housing. And then increasing the density at each of these communities to attract more of a mix of housing types. Again, moving away from the model of segregating low-income people in isolated pockets of poverty, but trying to create mixed-income neighborhoods in their place. That's an exciting example. There's other groups that are doing really good things. Virginia Supportive Housing is about to build a new housing facility for the chronically homeless. This is a population we haven't talked about really homelessness much, but we've got a small number. It's in the dozens of people that have been living on the streets of Charlottesville and the streets of our community for years, almost all of whom have either a substance abuse issue and or a mental health or a physical disability. We don't have a kind of housing that works for them right now. So many of them end up rotating in and out of shelters, in and out of jail cells, in and out of hospitals, in and out of mental health facilities. We've come up with a better solution, which is working in many other Virginia localities and across the country. It's called single room occupancy housing. And that's going to make a major dent in chronic homelessness in our community. There's lots going on. We have a small role to play in government, but a lot of it's happening outside of government. And that's the way it should be.
11:59 on the Wake Up Call. This is WNRN Charlottesville and WNRS FM Sweetbriar Amherst Lynchburg. Mayor, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you, Rick.
There's tons of stuff, like you said, at the very end. You know, all those organizations.
All right.
Other questions? Maybe I'll write you some, and we can post them on the on the comment section. What role does a university play?
Absolutely.
In the amount of housing and the cost of housing?
That's a big player,
et cetera. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Rick. I mean, we really could talk for hours about this, but someday we'll come back and finish up.
Yeah, I'll have you back on again.
All right, take care.
CevilleDave@hotmail.com.
That's right.
All right. Next week is Mother's Day. We'll be doing a show on the non-traditional role of mother, grandmothers raising the kids, same-sex parents dealing with two mothers, and some other or some other relationships like that. Up next, Les Timms Perdue.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday, and by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane, Exxon gasoline, and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@AOL.com or at wakeupcall@WNRN.org. The Wake Up Call is produced by Sean McCord. Tune in again next Sunday morning at 11 for The Wake Up Call, only on WNRN.